Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 30. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius. Leave a comment or a question for the show and become part of the conversation. My name's Luke Vincent and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David. How are you doing, Grant?
I'm good. You alright?
I am very well. I recently had some new double glazing installed, so... Oh, yeah, I am at least 5% warmer. So, yeah, that's enough of the double glazing that I'll talk about for this show, though, as we are mainly about Magic the Gathering rather than different types of glass. So, have you, this week, on the show, obviously, we're going to be talking about the recent GP Prague, I believe it was, and the PPTQ that I was in attendance for. I know you weren't there, but have you been doing anything else?
I haven't actually this related? Week. No, I've been using my cousin to play a few casual games. I've been looking at some of like the price spikes as a result of the decks we talked about last time, which is quite interesting. But other than that, I haven't actually been playing much Magic, unfortunately.
Okay, so is this the Vengevine stuff?
Yeah, mostly that, and some of the other decks we talked about last time, because that's quite fun. You know, cards that, like Bridge from Below, obviously, is more the Vengevine one as well. But other cards as well that just haven't seen play at all and just get massive price spikes for no reason apart from they're just suddenly seeing play and doing really well.
So is there anything in particular that you noticed that was quite noteworthy?
There was nothing that was surprising in terms of, again, what decks we talked about. It was mostly, again, the Vengevine sort of focus cards like Gravecrawler, you know, went from, I think it was like a dollar to like 7 or 8 at least, I think it is. Yeah. And just looking at just like the percentage increase of stuff is just interesting. And obviously I said like Vengevine went from like, 17 or 18 to like over 50. I think it's gone down a little bit, but only by like $5, you know. It's just fun watching the initial spike and seeing what's going to happen. And then obviously there's been another GP and of course that can cause like another spike if they're still there. And that's just quite fun.
It is crazy to sort of see it happen. I mean, it's kind of, if something does break out at Pro Tour, you do expect it to go. But yeah, $50 for Vengevine seemed quite excessive, especially when you think that it is just played in one deck.
Yeah.
But there we are.
Yeah. Although, you might be able to answer this one for me. Mm. I was looking at the list, the top Vengevine one, and it runs 4 street races. Is that just so you can get to whatever you need faster? There's no other reason for it, is there?
Pretty much.
Because it's not like it's, I was trying to think like, oh, does it do anything that goes to the graveyard because of Bridge from Blown? It doesn't, and because it's from play and all that. I think there's some other interaction, but I don't know if I would run that myself. Like, obviously it makes it faster, but I think I'd rather run, like, I don't know, more grave crawlers or more some sort of graveyard nonsense. Like, I don't know, actually, I don't know what I'd run, but some other graveyard thing was quite fun.
No, it does seem strange because it doesn't care. Bridge from Below doesn't care how many creatures are in your graveyard.
Yeah.
It doesn't run Tassia or the other one, Gurmag Angler.
Yeah.
So it doesn't want to fill up its graveyard for that reason. Yeah, I guess it's just, I mean, it plays Faithless Lootings. Maybe it's just to draw another card, but yeah, it does seem odd that wouldn't just be something else.
Yeah, I think I'd have something, a bit more fun, like, I don't know. There's probably some zombie card that's similar to Gravecrawler in some sort of way.
Mm.
Is it Bloodwraith, that one, the Landfall? Is that Bloodwraith?
Bloodghast.
Bloodghast, that's it, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Bloodghast, I think people are playing Bloodghast in there. If they're not, then...
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, well, maybe there's differences in the versions that do and don't. But I mean, like, that would be a fine replacement. I don't really understand the point. Because, like, with Death Shadow or Hollow One, I get why Street Wraith is there, because it's either for the whole life total thing.
Exactly, yeah, makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, or it's delving, like, but yeah, no, I agree, I don't really understand the point of that. It seems odd to me.
We might talk about it later with the sort of blue-white control increase. Obviously, it is quite a good deck, but surely it doesn't really have very many ways around, like, say, Rest in Peace. Obviously, it's got green, so it can get rid of stuff, but of course, by emptying their graveyard entirely, like Rest in Peace does when it comes in, surely that's really difficult to deal with. Like, it's weird for a deck to be as fragile towards graveyard hate to have done consistently quite well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think what's quite nice about the Vengevine deck is you have some games where you can just get under a Rest in Peace.
What do you mean?
So I had a game where I was testing out the deck I was playing in PPTQ, and turn 2, I was being attacked by 2 Vengevines and a kicked Bushwhacker.
Sure.
So if I'd then taken off turn 2 to go Rest in Peace, I'd still be being beaten to death with 2 Vengevines and a Bushwhacker.
Got ya, okay, fine.
So it's weird. The other thing as well is it does have a bit of resiliency with Greater Gargadon. I don't know if you've seen that in the lists.
No, I think not the one I recorded. That's quite cool.
Yeah, so it can just do that. Like, okay, yeah, you shut me off that, but if I can just play that, play a bit of a slower game. I think some of them are playing like one Stomping Grounds for like a bit of enchantment removal, maybe.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. And Verdant Catacombs, obviously that's a fetch land by itself, but to be able to fetch green, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. Is Brace to Gargadon spiked at all as a result of this deck? Because I love it when it... I think I was around for when Nahiri came out, where it suddenly went up from like nothing to a significant price.
Yeah.
And then I think it's gone back down again, but oh no, it's still only about $3. Nah. It once spiked, apparently, just for Kaladesh, it once spiked to $16.
What?
Oh no, it's gone up a little bit. It slowly went down. It got to about 3.5, and now it's gone up to about 4. But yeah, that's quite funny.
Odd.
Yeah, great card. Because it was like a $1 card consistently since Time Spiral, and then it went up since Nahiri.
Yeah, so it's got that in it. I guess for the reasons you said, if I was to choose between playing Dredgevine or Hollow One, I'd be more inclined to lean towards Hollow One, because if someone removes your graveyard, at least you can try and play Hollow Ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point.
So, and what's the other card that does a lot of damage as well? The 1/2 Jackal thing? Flame,
yeah,
that's something.
Ones, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you've got ways to actually kind of just ignore the Grave Hate.
Yeah, that's fair.
And also, there's just... I know it's going to happen to you sometimes anyway, but like just the fact that I've been wrecked by Burning Inquiry before, and sometimes that can just like, they have their sideboard cards in their hand and then you just cast a Burning Inquiry and then they don't have any sideboard cards anymore.
That's my kind of play, that is. Yeah. Just like, let's do everything randomly, but we'll probably suffer more than I will.
Yeah.
Also, I was thinking, I think the first one that came to mind, just because not many people max them out, is I think I would get rid of, personally, I would get rid of... some of the Street Raves and just put in more Collective Brutalities, just because I think they're just very, very good. So that's the way I would optimise it personally.
I would totally do that.
Yeah, exactly. So
the reality is they never cast Vengevine. Like that's something they never ever do. So like having the Brutalities, that's just doing everything you want.
Exactly, yeah.
So I mentioned briefly the PPTQ that happened recently. So there was one at Dice Saloon and I went to it and I wanted to try the red aggressive deck that I was putting together before with the 8 whack, but after playing a few more games I was off of the deck a bit. Blue white Jeskai and Mardu and various other decks just have such effective tools against what you're trying to do. You can just obviously smash them, but most matches were beginning to just feel like a bit of a coin flip. Either I had an up draw and killed them, or they had some amount of disruption and I just didn't do anything. So I think the deck's fine, but I can't really say much more about that. It was great fun. I recommend it to anyone just because it is so much fun just to kind of kill people out of nowhere. Turn two goldfishes are always fun in modern when people are trying to do their generic stuff and you can do that first. But yeah, I then moved on to something different and I ended up basically playing a worse version of blue-white because I wanted to try and brick wall a lot of these aggressive like Hollow One / Vengevine decks.
Mm.
And basically anything attacking with creature combat. So I built Turbo Fog and tried that out. Unfortunately, it didn't do very well. And I'm kind of not surprised because the deck, it's a weird one because like the deck is in general isn't very good. However, if you're playing against decks that want to turn stuff sideways, it can just crush them. Mm. So I was playing games online and I was basically just absolutely crushing Dredgevine, provided they didn't get too fast to draw. And Hollow One as well. It was kind of thinking, well, this is exactly where I want to be. Playing against Jund, as long as they don't have too much hand disruption, discard, then it's fine. Because again, their primary way of killing you is by attacking. And humans I was struggling with, and then I added Terminus to the deck. I kind of went a bit full on and just put like loads of fogs in, then slowly started to strip that back and went with Terminus. Terminus is great because obviously people want to overextend because they want to try and kill you. But then Terminus gets around that. So yeah, deck was feeling pretty good, but unfortunately it was an absolute dog to Tron. It's not even funny, and it's like nothing you do is even remotely relevant. Like, it is so bad. Like, you go, right, I play a Howling Mine, and the Tron player is just like, great, thanks for the extra cards. And the way it always played out is like you do some stuff, and then they're just like playing Oblivion Stone or Khan or Ulamog, and you just like you just can't deal with it. Even if you counter an Ulamog, it doesn't matter. You've lost two lands and then it's probably game over. So yeah, Tron was just like, I had to expect like that's a really bad matchup. So I went into the PPTQ. Blue-white was really bad as well. I would win games against blue-white, but it was very favoured in them because, again, they're able to disrupt you and not really kind of let you do what you want to do. And also, Turbo Fog really struggles against Planeswalkers because you've only got like a handful of ways outside of Counterspells to deal with them. So that's not good. I did win one game actually online where a guy ultimated Jace.
Sure.
Jace the Mind Sculptor. And I beat them.
Nice.
Yeah, which was great.
My biggest claim to fame in terms of ultimating a Planeswalker is I was playing in the side event at, I think it was Prague. I had that deck, I don't know if you've seen it. It runs loads of Planeswalkers, Doubling Season, Blood Moon, and then uses Oath of Nyssa to get around it, which is hilarious. But I was playing a game, what was it? Like an Ad Nauseam deck or something, I can't remember. But it was Ad Nauseam, yeah. Because I ultimated whatever the Jace is, I can't remember what Jace it is, but the one where his ultimate is you pick a card from each player's deck and cast it. So I looked through my library, cast an Emrakul, and looked through his deck and cast Thunderstorm and killed him with it.
Oh, brilliant.
Which was just hilarious. Like, it was just the biggest insult ever.
Not like this.
I was just looking at one of the Bridgevine decks, and I love the one that has four copies of Grisly Salvage, because I really miss that card.
Is that the green-black one?
Yeah.
Is that mill 4?
Mill 5. It's a really strong card. It's instant as well. It's great.
What?
I love it. Yeah, reveal top 5 cards of your library. You may put a creature or land from among it into your hand for the rest of your graveyard. I've always loved it. I built a legacy. I built a pauper deck that runs that and another sort of Golgari card of mine that's a big favourite. I can't remember which one it is. Oh, it's is it Drowning Filth? Very similar ability that kills creatures. But yeah, just this green, black, very efficient card thing that's instant. It's just... I haven't seen it, obviously, since it was in Standard, so that's really cool.
Mm.
I love stuff like that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so the PPTQ... I got mana screwed and mana flooded a couple of times after, and also there was a couple of games where you just run out of fog, and that's one of the big problems with the deck. The theory is you play all the draw effects, draw fogs, and then eventually mill your opponent out, obviously. But unfortunately, a couple of times my opponents would destroy the extra draw effects, so then you just run out of steam. Because it only really works if you're drawing like multiple cards a turn, and you're guaranteed to hit the things that you need. But a couple of sideboard games played out where it's like, okay, Howling Mine, okay, Nature's Claim it. It's like, okay, take a lot of damage, maybe fog another turn, and then it's just still only drawing one card, just die. So yeah, it didn't really work out. My opponents played very well actually as well. But there was one spot where I was about to get ahead in one of the games against Jeskai, and they resolved a Vendilion Click. And that just killed me. Literally, yeah. I was on 6 life, just like 2 swings from that.
Yeah.
Gut wrenching thing as well is like just look at your hand, see you've only got a negate and nothing else. It's like, But my board state was so good. My sideboard against control actually was really, I thought was quite interesting. So basically, control isn't very good matchup. So I had 4 Field of Ruins in my main deck and 3 Ghost Quarters in my sideboard and Crucible of Worlds.
Nice.
And I was doing it against that opponent. I didn't land a Crucible of Worlds, but I basically seen 3 Field of Ruins, 2 Ghost Quarters, and was just like hammering there, like just a couple of basics left basically in play. It was really just attacking that, but unfortunately, yeah, that Vendilion Click just snuck in under me, killing their one of their blue sources. So the theory was there, but it didn't quite pay off. I think a deck like Turbo Fog, you really need to be expecting a lot of like aggro matches.
Yeah, exactly.
As it happened, there was a lot of Tron in the room, which I got wrong. I thought there was like one Tron player. If I'd realised there was as many as there turned out to be, I wouldn't have played that deck at all.
Would you have gone for your call as a red deck?
Or? The other deck I was thinking of was Blue Moon, but a version which only plays 2 Blood Moon and no Spreading Seas. So that's been the direction that deck's kind of taken at the moment.
Yeah.
So 2 Blood Moon, 4 Bolts, Snapcasters, some amount of Vendilion Clicks, between main and side, couple of Jace the Mind Sculptors, Electrolyzes, Remands, Logic Knots, called Thing in the Ice, which is the big appeal. It's so good. And when I did used to run Blue Moon ages ago, actually, and one of the problems it had was closing out games, and you play things like a single copy of Batterskull, or Peer and Kira Nalar, or like Goblin Dark Dwellers, and you just kind of be like, yeah, this is fine. But like it was just kind of like meh. Whereas now, you know, with Thing in the Ice, it's fantastic because part of the problem the deck had was dealing with like more than four toughness creatures. So if you've managed to resolve a Thing in the Ice and you can protect it between remands and, you know, spell snares and just bolt and stuff, then like the tempo you get from that is so good. I've won a few games off the back of just like, people just conceded because it's just like, oh, they try to kill the Thing in the Ice and you stop them and they just tend to concede. It's just like that. It just gets untapped, bounces their board. So yeah, it's quite interesting. I was going to try it out with a bit of spice though, because a lot of people aren't playing this. They're playing like a Torrential Gearhulk or something else. I was going to try out Koth of the Hammer.
I like it. Okay.
It's so good. I mean, think about it. With Blood Moon, all those mountains.
Oh, that's just amazing. Yes. Give me this deck to play.
and the thing is, you're playing it. No one sees it coming. I've been playing it online, and the pause when I cast Koth of the Hammer, and it just sits there on the stack for a few seconds as they kind of obviously blink at the screen a bit.
Let me read this card. I've forgotten what it does.
What is it here with this guy's playing seven main deck islands?
I love that in computer games or obviously like online stuff like that, where obviously nothing's happening. All there is a slightly brief pause, but you know exactly the emotions and the thoughts that are going through your head.
Yeah.
Nice, I like that.
Oh, it's so good. But yeah, if I'd tested it a bit more, I probably would have gone that with that. And then the other default was which is good old Burn. But yeah, I wanted to try this old deck. Try and basically it's a little bit angle shooty. I wanted to try and see if I could just kind of, I guess, metagame really, but it did not work. And luck was not on my side in some of the draws I had as well. So it just kind of all fell apart. So that wasn't good. It was fun though, casting Howling Mine and every opponent picking it up or just staring at it. The amount of times people are like, oh, I get to draw cards, that's cool.
Like, the only way like I would want to pick it up is just to remember the other really weird clause of the if it's tapped thing, like unless they're going to try and tap it with some random ice or something like it.
Yeah, tap your Howling Mine. I have to say though, I did have sideboard Circle of Protection red.
Nice.
And I even had, because the only one I've got is like a 4th edition one, I had to double check before I started the tournament because I was like, is Circle of Protection even the format? And Mav did a double take.
Nice. Good work. Good work.
I saw him get he got his phone out and I had to like check it. It was actually in the format.
Excellent.
Even Chris was like sort of jokingly saying like, oh, I didn't know that was here. And then he called a judge. He called Mav over to ask a question about it. And Mav, it was almost like he was knowing what was happening. Already had the Oracle text up on his phone.
Yeah. When was it last printed? Was it like 8th or something?
Oh, yeah, probably. It is one of those old school enchantments.
9th edition. Okay, fair enough.
9th. Yeah, it's very close to 8.
It's got, yeah, last time it was in, well, the only time it was in Modern was when it had a whiteboard, but there we go.
Yeah, that card was great. Play it, never untap, never tap out, and then you're good to go.
Yeah.
That was the PBTQ. I don't know who won in the end. I went home early. That's how good my day was. Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun to play Turbo Fog.
That's a strong word.
Fun for me. So, it was weird. Actually, on balance, though, I was proper tilty going into the first game, because as I was shuffling up for my first round, I noticed that from the side of my deck, you could pick out certain sleeves. And my heart sank a bit, and I was like, oh, God. And I got Mav over straight away. I said, look, I've just noticed this. And he said, yeah, that's fine. You can re-sleeve. I just need to check something first. And I knew what he was going to check. He was going to check to make sure that there was no pattern to the the cards, and, you know, that's fine. And he looked, and he kind of paused, and I saw that the first couple were all fogs. And I was like, oh, God. Yeah. Then the ones behind them were like, there's like a negate, a land.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. So I had absolutely no idea what he was going to say. He turns around and like, all of these are like Holy Day. And I'll be like, oh, God. But no, it was fine. It let me re-sleeve about 8 into the time. But then even with the time extension, we finished well in time, which was good. And
that's all right.
Yeah, and it was against Jeskai Control as well. So I was like, I was dreading what this was going to turn into. But we played pretty tight, so it was good. Yeah, only one of my matches went to time. And that was with Chris, and he was playing a bit of a brew. So he wasn't sure what I was doing, and I wasn't sure what he was doing. So he was playing like this. I think he quite like actually the sweet Grixis dragons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, So it was he had the 2-mana counter spell from Karn's Ord, Fate Forged, which counters something unless you control a dragon. If you control a dragon, it costs one less.
Scorn, yeah. Nice card.
And then just shitloads of dragons.
Did he have like Dragon Tempest or stuff like that?
No, he had Eidolon the Great Revel, which really threw me. But his theory was, well, all of my stuff is expensive dragons.
Yep, makes sense.
So it doesn't hurt me. And I was kind of like, I can't really argue with that. That's fair enough.
There's a deck I want to run if Frontier becomes a thing. I reckon give it another couple of years. It might raise its head again. But if Frontier becomes a thing, I definitely want to have another go at the deck I played in Standard for quite a while, which was the deck that ran, what was it? It made tokens either by using Nissa or by using Secure the Wastes. And then you have that, is it Cryptolith Rite or something, where everything gets the Birds of Paradise ability?
Yep.
So you tap them for Descent of the Dragons, which is a 6-mana spell, which turns, you destroy as many creatures as you want, including the opponents if you want to, but they turn into dragons if they get destroyed. And then you run Dragon Tempest, so that all your dragons have haste, and when they come in, they do damage to a target equal to the number of dragons you have. So let's say you have 4 or 5 like soldiers, and because it's an instant, as you know, with Shadow Waste, you do it at the end of turn. So you make like 4 or 5 guys, whatever. Then you do Descent of the Dragons. If they counter it, it's not too bad either, because it's one of those few spells where if they counter it, nothing gets destroyed, and you only get a dragon if it happens to get destroyed by the spell.
Oh, it's not additional cost. That's good.
Which is good, yeah. So you do the 6 mana, you cast that. You kill, let's say 5 guys. So 5 dragons come in, but they all see each other, so the opponent takes 25 damage, because it's 5 times 5.
Like Balakut for dragons. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, so I think there was a game where I had 2 Dragon Tempests, so I think I did 5, so it's like you take 25, then 25 again, and then if you're alive, I'll swing for 20 as well.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I want to do that again, because I like the sort of dragon flavour stuff, and I like that Chris is trying to do that, because yeah, I miss a few dragon-focused cards from that block. That was nice.
No, it's cool. Have you seen the Scred Red Dret deck that exists now?
Oh.
It's got more of a dragon theme. Oh, so okay. If you just look up on MTG Top 8 or something like that, but they've put the new Sarkhan Planeswalker and Thunderbolt Regent in the deck.
Oh, I love Thunderbolt Regent. I miss that card.
Yeah. I think there's the Thundermaw Hellkite or Stormbreath Dragon in there as well.
Very nice.
It's pretty sweet. Blood Moon, you play a dragon, kill you.
Scred Red. Okay. Blood Moon. Oh, it's got Cough of the Hammer. Yes.
Yep.
Eternal Scourge. Okay, why not?
I'm not sure about that, but...
3 Pia and Kieran Nalar. Stormbreath Dragon, I haven't seen that one. Okay, fair enough.
Does a thing. Yeah, so that's PBTQ. What was a brew that you might have for us?
Yes. One I think I haven't talked about. I haven't played it for about 4 years.
Okay.
It's silly. It is a... again, stop me if I've talked about it before. It's a polymorph deck, so it has no creatures in it apart from Emrakul.
I don't think you have.
Okay, cool. So it's a polymorph deck, so it runs obviously 4 copies of polymorph, which if you don't know what polymorph does, you destroy a creature, and then whoever's creature it was, so you can do opponents if you want to, but obviously going to be doing mine. You destroy your creature, and then you look through your library, so you reveal at the top until you come across a creature, and it turns into that creature. So what you do is you get deck full of no creatures apart from lands and other things that turn into creatures. So you've got like Blinkoff Nexus, you've got Fairy Conclave, you've got County Garden, you've got Mutavaults, etc. And then you run 4 copies of Polymorph with like some other, you know, blue searchy cards like Anticipate and Remand and other counter spells and stuff as well. And then you kill your 0/1 plant and suddenly it turns into an Emrakul.
Excellent.
And it also runs 4 copies of Proteus Staff, which I'll be very surprised if you know what that is.
No, I've never heard of that.
Cool. It is a rare from Mirrodin, which basically does exactly the same thing as Polymorph. So it's a 3-mana artifact, but then you can pay 3 and tap it, and you do the same thing. So you, rather than destroy the creature, you put it on the bottom of your library, obviously for a token, doesn't matter. And then you reveal through your library until you get to a creature. So basically, it's a polymorph deck that relies on Polymorph, but has effectively 8 copies of it. So it's actually not as... When I first thought of it, I thought, oh, cool, Polymorph, and then did some keyword searching, and obviously Mass Polymorph there as well.
Yeah,
but with Proteus Staff, it's actually not as unreliable as you'd think, so it's quite fun.
What do you do when you draw your Emrakul?
When you draw an Emrakul, that's why it has 2 copies of it.
Okay.
It also used to run, I think for some reason I seem to have taken it out. I know it's got Thirst for Knowledge in it, which is draw 3 and discard 2, and it also ran one which was, what was it called, See Beyond, so draw 2 then shuffle a card from your hand into your library.
Nice.
And from that, obviously, nowadays, you can obviously run stuff like, what's that blue, the one scout, Charter Course, that's it. So you can run that if you wanted to. You also run Simic Signets, which obviously are like a ramp source, I guess. Yep. So I have got an Emrakul on turn three before, which was quite fun. But yeah, so it's a fun. You can also run like Pentad Prism works as a form of ramp if you want to. You can run like the germ weapons if you want to, like Flayer Husk and stuff, like the little cheap ones as forms of creatures, which is quite cool. And you can run like Swan Song as well, which obviously is quite cool because it's like cover most cheap counter spell. But you can even like counter your own spells to make a creature to then polymorph, so that's quite fun.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
But yeah, just the idea where you're like, okay, I've got like four mana, yeah, and they're like, okay, like I'm going to turn this Bloomwolf Nexus into a creature. Then first of all, they're like, why is this? Like, you're running green blue. Is this an Infect deck? And why isn't this an Inkmoth Nexus? What's going on? Mm-hmm. You've got to target Blinkmoth with Polymorph, and they're like, okay, because they're not really expecting the turn three, turn four Polymorph, and then just be like, yeah, here's an Emrakul now, and you don't get to cast it. You know, that's a bit sad, but it's still an Emrakul.
It's still there.
Yeah, so that's quite fun. Where else does it run? Run Search for Tomorrow as well, just as a bit ramp. Obviously, you can polymorph into whatever you want as well. Like, for instance, I've got in the sideboard, I've got an Iona, Shield of Emeria. So if you want to screw over a certain coloured player, so if you're doing like mono blue, you just do Iona blue, done. It also runs. I think this was at a time when like Lily of the Veil was really popular. So I ran like Sigarda, so it stops you from sacrificing stuff.
Nice.
Or against Burn, there's probably some better choices now, to be honest, but against Burn I had Imperial Archangel, you know, the 5/8 Flying Shroud, which redirects all damage to her instead. So although like Emrakul is obviously more effective, if you're like on, you know, by the time you do this polymorph on turn 3, turn 4, you're probably like on, you know, 5 or less health, you just do an Imperial Archangel, and although she doesn't kill them as quickly, it means you don't lose to double lightning bolt. So
yeah.
So yeah, there are funny sideboard options you can do. Other ones I got. You could do. I've got a Chroma on here. Elder Scale Worm. You could also run that. What's it called? Is it? What's the one that locks your life total?
Oh, Platinum Imperium.
Yeah, you could have that if you wanted to. Obviously, Path of Bolt, so probably not. But Progenitus, if you want to just go pretty standard. You got your little foily one you want to use.
Did I tell you? So I was playing against Living End. I was using Burn. And I boarded into Madcap Experiment Platinum Imperium.
Okay.
I was. Yeah. They got me. I was like, okay.
Hang on. So you're playing Living End. They're playing Burn.
No. Sorry. I was playing Burn. They were playing Living End. And the Living End player boarded into Madcap Experiment Platinum Imperium. And I was gobsmacked. I was standing there like, what the hell?
That's just so good. Oh dear. You just lose. Like, you can't do anything, can you?
Well, I threw three burn spells at it, and then they Living End and got it back.
Oh.
I was like, it's fine, I've got this. I can see a way I can win. And he's like, instep Living End. I was like,
oh.
No.
Oh, interesting rules question someone asked me the other day. This is the kind of thing that happens. Like, if people I haven't spoken to for like 2 or 3 years will just message me out of the blue saying, how does this rules thing work? Which is absolutely fine. But it was, so you've got Chalice of the Void and Shattering Spree. How does that work? Chalice is obviously on one.
Shattering Spree is just the one on which replicates.
Yeah.
I know this one because I was so tilted against losing.
I thought you might.
Losing against Lantern that I made a point of knowing how this interaction works. So essentially, Chalice of the Void says you're countering a spell. Now, in order for a spell to be countered, I believe it needs to be cast. Whereas the replicate on Shattering Spree just says pay one red, copy the spell. When you copy a spell, you don't actually cast it, you just put a copy of it on the stack.
Correct. Yeah. The trigger for Chalice countering stuff is when a spell is cast, so it's not. So it counters the first one, and then you just go, I'll just do it again on a different target. Yeah, or the same target.
The same target. Yeah. So yeah, the way you got to do it is you need enough mana to actually target it twice.
She's 2 mana, so that's fine.
Which is fine, yeah. One thing I will say is, we were talking earlier before we started recording about how unintuitive Magic Online is. Replicate is insane. So you choose your first target, and then it puts 4 different copies over say you replicate it 4 times. It then puts those 4 copies on the stack above it.
Yes.
And they're all targeting the same thing. And it asks you, do you want to do the same target? Okay or no? But you've got to click the copy and then click a target and then do the same for each one, but then not skip ahead. Because if you skip ahead, then you lose. I basically ended up like targeting the same thing 3 times. I had no idea what was going on.
Well, at least you know it's dead. That's the
It got to the point where I was like, I needed to kill an ensnaring bridge rather than that. So I just kind of cut my losses and made sure I targeted the bridge like 3 times. because I don't know. I don't know how to get this to target the chalice. I just all of the bridge, all of the bridge. Dreadful.
Amazing.
Stupid magic online. I like the polymorph deck. I might actually send me a list, and I'll obviously put it on the in the show notes. But I might try and have a little play with that online.
Yeah, this is like severely out of date. I don't know if it's got. Last updated 2 years ago. So yeah, obviously people had like charter calls and stuff. Whatever, go nuts.
Well, the first thing I want to do is put Bitter Blossom and Collective Brutality in there, because I want to be able to shuffle Emrakul back in, and Bitter Blossom seems to be good for making tokens. So
yeah, I like that. I like that idea. Yeah. I think this was when I was, like, was first getting to Modern. I didn't have like a playset of many things, so I just went like a budget deck, because I had like, I think, one copy of Emrakul, and the rest of it is just not very expensive at all. So I was like, yeah, cool, budget deck, done.
Nice. Okay, so there was, as well, a GP very recently, last weekend, I believe, in Prague, so GP Prague, and it was Modern, and the top eight saw pretty much very familiar deck lists. I think we've kind of touched on this before, that there's Modern's very diverse, and there's not very much difference in what you're seeing in the deck list, though, even though there is a lot of diversity. So at the moment, we've got Hardened Scales as one of the decks in the top eight.
Let's just stop with Hardened Scales for a second, because I've just seen at the land base, it's got a Phyrexia's Core and a Ruins of Oran Reef. This is a fantastic person whoever's making this deck.
Phyrexia's Core is really nice.
Love the Ruins of Oran Reef, I missed that card.
Yeah, that is good. I mean, it's just, what I'm quite enjoying about seeing Hardened Scales at the moment is this has gone from being someone's pet deck to actually this is the real deal. And
animation module, what's going on?
I know. And again, you're seeing these things crop up, and you're like, "Is this some kind of joke? Why? What?" But actually, they're doing it, yeah. And it's good. The synergies of it. So those not familiar with animation module, whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are placed on a permanent you control, you may pay one. If you do, create a 1/1 servo. 3, tap, choose a counter on target permanent or player, give that permanent or player another counter of that kind, and it's a 1/1 artifact itself. So your deck basically puts +1/+1 counters on stuff. So every time you're doing that, you can then create tokens. And then just the synergies with everything here is just so good. And yeah, what I really like about this deck is one of the key weaknesses for Affinity is Stony Silence. And this is playing... So what you struggle with is the original land base of Affinity is actually getting mana of the right color to destroy any enchantment with Stony Silence. So because you typically play... just 4 copies of like a Glimmer Void and maybe 1 basic. Whereas this is playing 6 Forest and 2 Horizon Canopy and a Pendlehaven. So that's 7 sources of green for your sideboard Nature's Claims versus only 4, maybe 5. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's pretty good. It's just helping kind of reduce some of that weakness to Stony Silence, because sometimes you do just fold to that. But this deck doesn't necessarily really need the activated abilities. Yeah, obviously it's got Artbound Ravager, Ballista, and Steel Overseer, but it can just play big creatures. Like, your creatures just get stupid with enough Hardened Scales.
Yeah, because that just triggers off of that, and you don't need the Steel Overseer to just make more counts anymore. You're just good.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the animation module, that's a triggered ability, right? So you just get around that as well, which is nice.
Yeah. So you know, you've got things in there which you don't have to worry about. And the thing about it as well is, you're expecting Stony Silence, you just maybe take a couple of copies out of some of the stuff that's got activated abilities. So you don't completely take out all the Ravagers, but maybe you take out a Ravager, a Hangerback Walker.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff that you can not get hosed by it so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hardened Scales is the real deal. One of the other Affinity players at the PPTQ was asking me if I've been converted yet to Hardened Scales. Have I made the change from the regular Affinity to... And it really does feel like this is the correct way to play Affinity at the moment.
It's like fun, yeah.
It's really strong.
I'm not a fan of Affinity, but I still want to play it because it looks really good. But I've fortunately got rid of my playset of Ravagers and Mox Opals, so that's a no.
Rest of the top eight saw 2 human decks, 2 Bant Spirit decks, 1 Jeskai Control, 1 Infect, and 1 Krark Clan Ironworks combo. I'm not going to talk about the Krark Clan Ironworks combo. It does its thing.
Right.
Infect as well. It's trying to poison you. I don't know. This has made quite a bit of a resurgence recently. And the deck's fine. I thought losing the 0 mana peak from New Phyrexia actually just kill the deck, but it seems to be just less bothered about that. What is it called? Yeah, Cataxian Probe. That's what I was thinking of. But yeah, it's a perfectly fine linear deck which tries to kill you before you do stuff. People enjoy it. Beyond that, there was only one deck that I wanted to kind of point out in the top 32, and that was, there was a lot of blue-white control as well. If you're thinking that deck's gone away, it really hasn't. Anyone who plays any amount of Magic Online will confirm that you will be playing against that quite a lot. The deck that I wanted to mention, though, was...
Insoul Artifact. Yes, love that card.
Yeah. So, Insoul Artifact isn't necessarily new tech as far as Infinity is concerned. Some decks have played it, some decks haven't. The stock thing to do is play four Galvanic Blasts, and that's that. But this deck is... So it's Affinity, and it's cut four Blink Moth Nexus. It's not playing any Blink Moth Nexus at all. And it's playing one Academy Ruins, one Ghost Quarter, and two Islands instead. Four Ink Moth Nexus and four Spire of Industry.
Look at this Tezzeract, man.
And it's got a Tezzeract Agent of Boles. Only three Cranial Plating, three Springleaf Drum, four Darksteel Citadel, four Mox Opal, and then, yeah, the Insoul Artifacts. So obviously a real heavy blue splash.
Four Stubborn Denials.
That's four really Stubborn Denials, which is really interesting because I'd seen that in sideboards before. People bought into either Spell Pierce or Stubborn Denial, and I'd always been on the kind of the Spell Pierce side of that fence, but I can see why they put the Stubborn Denial in, because obviously anything with a Cranial Plating on, that's going to be a hard counter.
Yeah.
And yeah, three Walking Ballista, four Volt Scourge, three Steel Overseer, all the usual suspects, but the full four Master of Aetherium and no Protection from All Colours guy.
Something champion.
The champion of something. None of those. So I just thought this is a slightly different take on Affinity. That's quite interesting, just because of the four Stubborn Denials. I think the Hardened Scales version is better, but if you're considering Affinity, this is good. What this does give you is Scion Master Thopterist as well in the sideboard.
Yeah.
And that card is fantastic. I don't know about Thopter Spy Network, but obviously they had an idea.
How dare you.
And Failure to Comply. Two mana bounce spell, which does a little Meddling Mage impression afterwards. So yeah, that was it. Nothing else I really wanted to talk about in the rest of the top 32. They're all pretty much stock. That was the most spice that I thought I saw from top 32.
Oh, really. I love the dispatch in the sideboard. I love that.
Dispatch is great. So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. Follow the group and keep up to date with whenever we are sending out podcasts. We can also be found on the MTGCast network. That is mtgcast.com. As well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more. Take care.
Bye.
You don't play Magic Online, do you?
Nope.
No. Yeah, it's...
I tried it once and was just like with like a sample deck. It wasn't very good, so someone who got out a Nicol Bolas Planeswalker against me resolved his ultimate, and it took me 15 minutes to resolve the ultimate, and that's when I thought Magic Online is not supposed to be played by humans.
I think that is a fair assessment. I tried playing a combo deck on there once, and you get to the point where you realise actually what I have to do to win every game is just not fun anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.